Welcome back to Reading the Room. I'm Alan Neal, host of CBC Ottawa's Drive Home Daily Show, All in a Day. And the All in a Day Book Club meets several times a year with a local author to discuss their latest book. This hour, we're coming to you from Ottawa Technical High School because the book Johnny Delivers by Wayne Ng centers around a grade 12 student named Johnny who delivers takeout from his parents' Chinese restaurant in Toronto in the 1970s. When he finds out that his mom owes a lot of money to Auntie, thanks to big Mahjong losses, Johnny starts a side hustle with his dropout buddy Barry, selling pot to customers who have coded their orders as egg rolls with a side of mustard. And he's dealing with all that on top of, you know, racism and being 17. Johnny doesn't know what he wants to do after graduation. That was a situation that Liam, a student at Ottawa Tech, understood completely.
I can relate to that because it's a trade school, so like everyone is like, oh, I want to be an electrician. Like, oh, already everyone's in co-op and everything, but I want to be an actor. So it's kind of like there's a separate thing, you know? And I can relate to him just being so uncertain about things. Mm-hmm. Like, is this the right path, you know? What would Bruce Lee think about this? What would he do? Would he just take charge? Can I do that? Like, how would he tell me to deal with this situation? I can relate to that so much with characters I believe in, and like Spider-Man, of course, and other characters.
Liam is wearing a Spider-Man shirt right now, for those of you who cannot see him at home. Yes. Wayne approves of Spider-Man as a
my
hero.
Favorite superhero. Actually.
That's right. That's good. That's good. Strong. Just that idea of people trying to figure it out. John Jay is right there. You were also saying you related to that idea of the expectation that everybody's supposed to, you're supposed to know exactly what you're doing now.
Yeah, I think it's very hard for some people to like know what the future is going to be and like exactly what they're going to do in life and like what they're expected to do and how they're going to, you know, like what their future is and stuff. And it's just, there's a lot of expectations from people to be successful and stuff like that.
And for Wayne, when you're thinking of the expectation of success for Johnny, like what is he seeing success as being?
Well, I think Johnny just wants to get through the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he has for quite a while. His role has been to save his family, keep them out of trouble, and that is success. His success is making sure there's enough stock to keep the restaurant going. Thinking about college is just so far out there. It's not something that he ever considered until Mr. Miller put it in his head.
Right.
Like he probably had other dreams, but he doesn't allow them to fester because he's locked into his family. That's the role and expectation that he's placed on him.
He also takes on this entrepreneurial role.
He has skills, right?
Yes, and he has friends who are connected in this, this world as well. So Taylor, you were saying that you related to many parts of Johnny, but one of them was being surrounded by friends who were in altered states, shall we say, individuals who were where you were perhaps the most sober one in the room. You understood what it was like for him to be with Barry.
Yeah, like a few times in the book, he's just talking to Barry, and Barry is just like in his own world, basically. And I relate to that so much because I have friends who, you know, smoke weed, not to name names. And, you know, it's like that every day. And yeah, it's every day. And, you know, it's kind of, it's almost draining in a way because, you know, having to repeat yourself, say 20 times over the same thing, it's just like, oh my God, can you just understand already? Like,
we've already had this conversation.
Yeah. But
what did you make of how Johnny deals with it in the book, how he deals with Barry? Like, is it a similar strategy as to what you take?
Well, first of all, I just want to say, the cut that they're doing, you know, it's not really fair. You know, Johnny's kind of doing everything. Barry's just like, yeah, like, you know, give me like 66%. I'm like doing so much.
You thought through the economics of this, did you, Taylor? That's good.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
Good. Yeah. And he's another entrepreneur.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
Sorry, could you just repeat the question?
Yeah, again? No, how he deals with it. That was actually a better answer than my question was going to be. But how he deals with Barry, do you think he's deals with him in a strategy that makes sense? Like, this, do you deal similarly with friends when they are in altered states and you have to keep repeating yourself?
Yeah, like, of course. Like, I don't know. It's kind of, it's different on a day-to-day basis because, like, you know, sometimes they'll get it on the first thing and then the next, it's just like, it's like I'm talking to a brick wall sometimes, I swear.
Wayne, when you were, right, thank you, Taylor. Thank you. When you were figuring out how to write Barry, and I think Taylor has captured him very well in his voice as well. What was the Barry a tricky one to write?
Oh, Barry was the easiest character to write. Yeah, I think our friends hang in the same circles. Yeah, they could be related. I think if you grew up in the 70s, you knew a Barry, right?
And apparently, if you live in 2025, you know the berries.
Yeah, that's exactly. That's yeah.
Teo is in the audience as well. There you are up front. Teo, you had an interesting take on this because you were saying, as you're a teenager as well, you'd said you'd been on both sides of the equation, the buying and the selling. Tell me what you related to in Johnny's stress here as his business launched. Well,
there's a lot of like interesting people when you're in the like mustard world, or just drugs in general, and being around those people kind of like affects you. That's the people that you're in your life. You're like, oh shit, I'm not going to like university. I'm a drug dealer, or I smoke a bunch of weed. This is not like my path, but it can be. It's just that you think it's not. Because that's what the people around you are like. So I feel like that kind of affects how he wants his life to go.
The minute that people understand that you are involved with drugs, it's all you are allowed to be. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm saying. Like, all my friends, too, that do drugs, they have the same problem. They're like, oh, you know, I can just be a bum. Like, that's just not, like, as bum, I just mean, like, do drugs, don't do anything else. Do more drugs, have fun, party. While you could be doing something in the middle, you know, do some drugs, do some schoolwork, you know, do a bit of everything. You don't need to be going all out all the time.
There's a public service announcement in there somewhere. Do some drugs, then do some schoolwork.
Yeah.
But I mean, I honestly, like, Teo, it's a really interesting point, though, how much you become limited by, like, how do you break out of that, though? Because we saw what happens with Johnny. How do you break out of the idea that I am only this?
Yeah. I don't know. I think it would just be realizing that the labels you put on yourself and that other people put on you is not what you are, and who you are isn't actually any label. It's just a mix of all of them, right? So just do something. Don't just do the same thing. I guess that's all I'm saying.
What do you make of the drug dealing strategy in the book? Is this a smart one?
No, I mean, it's well known. It's not like it's never been thought of. Like, I think the cops would get on pretty quick, and there's a lot of things he misses out on, like the fact that he didn't think that people would come into the restaurant and be like, hey, I need my mustard, like, and then his parents wouldn't be like, what are you talking about? Like, it's not gonna go perfectly every time, and he should have had some backup plans.
Okay,
Teo, it could be a consultant for the next book.
You know, if can we talk after for the sequel? Yeah, I gotta say, Teo, I had a drug dealing consultant. He's in the room, okay, and you know,
it's not me. Just I know the wig, but no,
it's possible to deal drugs and make a life of yourself and wind up teaching kids, and that's all I'm saying. Not to say
also
that he's
not a teacher at Ottawa Technical Secondary School.
Right.
Yeah. But where did the idea come from for the mustard and egg roll being code for drugs.
Well, it's completely fictionalized. But Linda up there tells me, and I just read this the other day as well, that in Quebec, certain parts of Quebec, you can order egg rolls with a side of a hot sauce and mustard. And like, holy shit. But I assume it's just really an egg roll with hot sauce and mustard. And in the States, it's not uncommon to have an egg rolled with a side of mustard. But when I wrote it, I'd never heard of it before. I just made that up. But the egg roll, using that as...
That would get really confusing then, Linda, if you were like part of the, like if you were ordering, thinking you were really just going to get an egg roll with mustard, and then you ended up with like the baggie at the end of this.
Yeah. No, I've never ordered egg rolls with mustard. It was just something we did at home. Like my parents did come from Quebec, so maybe that's where it came from.
Linda, you had another line, though, that was of interest as well. This is where Johnny's mother is talking about Angie as well. What, tell me about the scene that stuck with you.
Okay, so that was on page 172. And this is when his mother is making egg rolls, and then he comes up and sits beside her, and then she took a deep breath, and she said, you know, she's very nice and everything, but she's not for you, and you are not for her. You do not know this yet, but she will soon, very soon. So his mother, when she met Angie on the bus or on the train, asked her some very pointed questions and very, you know, astute questions to find out, okay, she's a really nice girl, she has goals, she has values, you know, her family's important to her, but she's very ambitious and she knows where she's going. So obviously his mother picked up on the fact that she was not riding in the same orbit as Johnny was, and that it was not going to last for sure. But Johnny being in the moment and in the relationship, or trying to be in the relationship, couldn't see that yet. And probably Angie didn't know it yet either. Yeah.
What were you trying to get at with that scene? Because it's an interesting moment of another sort of dream deflated for him by his mom.
Yeah, you know, the early drafts of Johnny Delivers were quite different than this. It was my editor, Margot Lapierre, who said, you know what, Wayne, you got to lean into what you're really good at, and that's writing family stuff. So that's what I did.
What were you leaning into before?
Well, it was much darker. Like, I mentioned the character Emmanuel Jacques, who's a Souchine boy, an immigrant Souchine boy who was murdered in Toronto, and that actually happened. And that was the historical backdrop. And it was just this massive elephant in the room in the novel. And it just had this dark cloud over the entire novel, and it just, like, it didn't work. And if Margot didn't pick up on that and just swat me over the head a few times, wait, smarten up, it would have been a very different novel. So I thank Margot for that. So she told me to lean into family stuff, because I did that really well with The Family Code and Letters from Johnny before that. And when I wrote this, my mother had just died. And I've always wanted to write a novel, a father-son novel. And I've been saying this for years, and I've written four novels in a row, including the one that's out on submission, where the predominant dyad relationship are mother and son. Huh. So, Alan, I've got mommy issues, is what I'm saying, right? So I was trying to build up mama, and mama's the big winner at the end of the story.
Right.
Author Wayne Ng, pouring out his heart to the All in a Day book club as we discussed his novel, Johnny Delivers. I'm Alan Neal, and you're listening to Reading the Room. And something our book club members have come to expect is I try to always have a surprise for our author at every book club meeting. In Johnny Delivers, the 17-year-old protagonist holds two heroes in inflated regard in his mind's eye. There's martial artist and actor Bruce Lee, and 1970s Toronto Maple Leaf star Dave Keon. You could guess maybe which one I did not manage to have join us via Zoom. Let's tune back in to hear why Wayne Ng, like his character Johnny, worshipped Bruce Lee.
Yeah, you have to understand the context of Bruce Lee, because I grew up watching Asian characters depicted like caricatures, like stereotypes, Bucktooth, you know, really offensive characters. And, you know, I've talked about silence, how the history of Chinese Canadians, one of the ways they survived all these repressive measures was by being quiet. Mm. Keep their head down, swallow the shit, look the other way. It was a survival technique. And, you know, it works fine until, you know, your emotions become too repressed and then other things happen. We'll get into that another time, maybe. But out of the blue, this guy about my size, you know, way better looking than me, you know, jumps into the world, my world, you know, and Johnny's world with a roar. No more silence. I mean, he struts around, he shrieks, he shouts, his battle cries in the films. I mean, like, wow. Like, he revolutionized he started mixed martial arts, essentially. Yeah, yeah. I mean, he was just an incredible figure to land in Johnny's life and in my life. Like, he was just so unlike anything we'd ever seen.
Because it's interesting how he wrestles in the book between, like, the, you know, all-out strut of Bruce Lee and then his love of the hockey player Maple Leaf Dave Keon.
Right.
Which is also, I believe, based in reality. Like, what did Dave Keon mean to you in terms of as heroes go?
Well, Dave Keon, who's more prominent in the first book, Letters from Johnny, I love the fact that he played fair. He was a gentleman. He was a white knight, I may. And he played for the Toronto Maple Leafs, which was everything if you grew up in Toronto. So Bruce Lee's a more complicated character. And Johnny's a more complicated person at 18. The heroes aren't as black and white. So in Johnny Delivers, Bruce starts off as black and white. He's just a hero. He says and does the right thing. But the relationship and his perspective of Bruce evolves as well, which doesn't so much in the first book with Dave Keon.
There's a point where you say, Keon, like Bruce, moves with grace and speed, able to explode and pounce on an opponent's weakness. Anybody could tell he loves what he's doing. Watching Keon is like watching Bruce, who never trash-talked or showed up an opponent. Keon bleeds honor and dignity, too, just like Bruce did. Like, these are powerful words to be talking about somebody with. Like, there's
I truly loved those two characters, and I don't know if Mr. Keon would like this, but like he's an absolute gentleman. You say you shouldn't meet your heroes, but I had some contact with him. He's a wonderful man. I'll obviously never get to meet Bruce Lee, but I recognize that he's a more textured person to me because there's deep, rich biographies of him that I've read, which I haven't with Dave Keon.
Well, I might be able to help you with that. Joining us now on the line from Florida, former Maple Leaf great.
No.
Helped them win the Stanley Cup four times.
No
Dave
way.
Keon
no
is
way.
With us right now.
Oh, my God.
No. He's there on your screen.
No way. Oh, my God. You're killing
me. Hello, Mr. Keon.
How are you?
This is not my real hair, just so you know. It's a wig.
Okay.
But thank you so much for being here and jumping in this. I need to give Wayne time to recover because he's actually lost the ability to breathe right now. That comparison with Bruce Lee, like had you been compared to Bruce Lee before this book? Do you know?
That's a first for me.
What is it like finding out that you've been put on hero status in two books now by this guy?
Well, it's a little overwhelming. he should have gotten a life.
That will be words he always remembers, Mr. Keon.
And then I would have never met you like this.
Yeah. So you've got the chance now. You said you never get to meet your idol. You're meeting him face to face. What do you want to tell him?
So there's a line in the book where Johnny imagines he can only make one delivery, to Bruce's house or to your house, Mr. Keon. I'm going to your house.
know, it's a long drive.
I'm coming.
Bruce versus Dave battle that he's having through the book. It comes back to this idea of sort of the fighter all out there versus the gentleman. I just wondered, that idea of being the good guy, being gentlemanly, not being the trash talker, not being the guy who's fighting with other people. Is it ever hard being the gentleman?
No, I never thought it was hard. You only have so much energy, and if you waste it fighting, you don't have anything left to play. So I always wanted to play.
And that's one of the reasons why so many people still love you, Mr. Keon.
Dave Keon, thank you for being with us on the All in a Day Book Club. Thank you for being here.
Are you kidding me, man?
Thank you.
Andrea also had a take on Bruce Lee, which we will end with for the evening, as somebody who is not Asian herself. I just want to clarify for people at home. But you related to a lot of what Wayne was saying in the book.
Yeah, Bruce Lee was a hero for, I think, all the kids that grew up in the 80s in the communist Romania. Because we didn't have access to a lot of things on TV. And through the black market, some people were able to get videotapes. And Bruce Lee was, for some reason, one of the most popular movies. And I don't remember exactly how old I was, but somewhere around maybe 8 or 9. That was the first movie I saw that, for me, was... wow, like a mind-blowing, because imagine you never seen anything like this on TV, and all of a sudden this guy shows up, and it's a symbol of courage, and it was a glimpse of freedom, and what I understood of freedom at that time.
73 when he died, I just knew him as a fighting machine and this Asian who kicked ass, and that was good enough, yeah. Right? But over time, as I read more biographies and really got to know the man a little bit more, I mean... he had all his warts and, you know, he wasn't perfect. I mean, the stuff about him smoking weed and having mistresses and all that kinds of stuff, working himself to death, it's all there. That gives him texture, makes him real. And I think I liked him more that way. Hmm. Yeah, so I appreciate him more now.
Knowing the frailties of the hero.
Yeah, well. He's a real person, not just an idol.
Yeah. There's so much more we could talk about here, but I thank you tremendously for both creating Johnny and for bringing us together with a fantastic book to talk about. And I thank all of you for being here. For Wayne Ings, Johnny Delivers. Thank you so much, everybody.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to Reading the Room today, being part of the All in a Day Book Club by your radio or listening device. This hour, we were discussing Wayne Ng's novel, Johnny Delivers, with Wayne himself. And that's what we do several times a year at CBC Ottawa. We gather the authors together, we gather them in a room, we talk to them about their book. In January, we're in fact tackling two books together. For the first time, there's going to be a graphic novel, Jordana Globerman's Soul Machine, and Amal El-Mokhtar's novella, The River Has Roots. They're both books about sisters who have magical powers, and I think it's going to be a fascinating discussion to hear those two young women talking to each other about their books. So, if you would like to be part of that, I would love to have you there. cbc.ca/bookclub is how you join. A huge thank you to the CBC production team who makes this all work every book club. Our technical team of François Pelletier and Alexandre Duval and Pascal Jobin, our associate producers running mics around the room to talk to all these listeners, Isabel Harder and Jody Applewaite and Helena Chaubaison, and Reading the Room's packaging producer, amazing packaging producer, is Amanda Putz, and the CBC Book Club is produced by me, Alan Neal. Thanks so much for joining us, and go buy a book.